Shiva. It's very rare that any of the Rebbeim have a chance to address the entire yeshiva as a whole. And coming back from my last 2 weeks being in America, so I have a lot of things on my mind, which some of them had to do with you guys and with our alumni, but I wanted to share a few words with you. And Dafka, I think that the month of Adar is an appropriate time to address the concerns slash issues slash excitement of the upcoming days. Every Jewish month has personality. And we can go through, starting from Tishrei, personality of Chagim, of the Yom Noraim. I'm sure it seems like to many of you like moons ago, and some of you like just yesterday. As he went through the emotions of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the elation of Sukkot. Then you have, of course, other months, like Nisan, that are preparatory months, planning on working on our Haggadah, and ridding ourselves of Chametz, both the spiritual version of Yetzer Hara and the physical version, planning for the Seder as the backdrop of Nisan. Obviously, Av is a time of great sadness, commemorating things we don't have anymore, and things we wish, you know, we wish we remembered, we wish we knew of in the first place. And Baruch Hashem, Adar is exactly the opposite. Adar is a month of tremendous koach. The word Adar is from the word Adir, which means mighty. The month of Adar is a mighty month. It's an exciting month. It's a time when if you have a Beis Din, you have a court appointment with a non-Jew, you should schedule it for Adar. Because Adar is a time when we know Kadosh Baruch Hu is looking out for us and cares a lot about what we do. Maybe even more than other months. We have a certain koach from Shemayim, a certain assistance, certain help. Dafka in the month of Adar, more than many other months that we're going to have. It's a time full of tremendous simcha. We should know, again, it's a whole. It's not only Purim. We should know it's Adar. Marcus simcha. It's a time of excitement, a time of an entire month worth of excitement. And it happens to be the last month of the biggest month that we have in Yeshiva. It's the last month. Chor Zman again, I don't know how many people remember the beginning of it. It was only a few months ago. And I'm sure you're looking like, gosh, what am I going to do to the end of this Zman? It's such a long Zman. Many of you weren't even in Yeshiva at the time we started Chor Zman. And here we are. This is the last month of the biggest Zman we're going to have. Not the last Zman we're going to have. The largest Zman. The one that comes with the greatest power. The greatest punch. We're about to enter the final stretch run. You know, I was at the Alumni Shabbaton. We had a brought up with 85 guys, which, by the way, Joe Teplo, one of your classmates, was actually the first of your year to attend it. He wanted me to shout that out. He told me all year long, my goal is to be the first one at the Alumni Shabbaton. He achieved his goal, Baruch Hashem. And every year I go, I usually end up two Shabbases with alumni every year, besides when they come to visit us. And every year at the end of it, I have a great Shabbat, but I can't figure out why. I usually leave so depressed. Not because the guys are doing great, because I don't have a chance to speak to them at all. You have 85 guys, which I feel very close to many of them, and they all say, oh, I want to tell you this, I want to speak to you that. I'm saying, absolutely, we'll walk home together. You'll pull me aside after davening. Needless to say that if I tell 40 guys the same thing, there's a good chance I'm not going to hear from more than 5 of them. So I leave every year with 35 guys I feel like I let down. And yeah, I love it. Every single year, I love the Lama Shabbaton. I was wondering, what do I like about it so much? It's such a depressing thing for me. I feel so close to my students. I feel like I'm so excited to see them. Yeah, I spend such little face time with them. So what's so special about Lama Shabbaton? Why do I look forward to seeing you guys there, even when I can't speak to you either, when you want to speak to me, in the coming years? I'm going to say that realization that I had, I'm going to save it for the very end to explain to you why I think it's so special. I want to tell you two shots from Moshe Feinstein, which I learned with Jeremy Siegel over the course of the last number of weeks. Both of them, I think, were very powerful, and both are very related to what we're about to speak about for the next few minutes. The first one is the Torah points out, Rashi points out, quotes the Medrash, that a number of times in the Torah it says the words Moshe and Aaron, sometimes in that order, sometimes the order is Aaron and Moshe. And we want to know, why are we switching around the names of Moshe and Aaron and Moshe? What's the reason behind it? So Moshe Feinstein, well, he quotes this, again, the Rashi quotes the Medrash, and says, because Moshe and Aaron were really equal. They both served Kadosh Baruch Hu in the same way, in the greatest of ways. And therefore, Moshe is Aaron and Aaron is Moshe. They're the same. Moshe Feinstein asks, I don't understand. They're not the same. Lo kam ki Moshe od. Moshe ought to be called Adam. There was no Eved like Moshe. No one compared to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's true, Aaron was great. He was the Kohen Gadol. It wasn't Moshe. There was only one Moshe. They weren't the same. What do you mean? Who Moshe, who Aaron? And he answers by way of the following Gemara Mavasra, the Avidim Abbeis. It brings down, the Gemara tells a story of an Amora who got very sick and almost died. When he came back to this world, they asked him, his father asked him, what did you see in the Olam HaEmes? What did you see in that world? He said, I saw an upside down world. Everything was upside down. The people who were on top here, on bottom, bottom, top. Doesn't make any sense. And his father said, no, you saw really a true world, a world full of Emes. What's the conversation? What, you're saying that the Amora went up to Ramayim and felt like God was wrong in how he judged the world? It was Olam HaFuch. This is Olam HaFuch. That's Olam HaEmes. Why is he saying that is Olam HaFuch? If you see everyone who we think is great in this world are really down in that world and vice versa, then we should know that we're really off. They're not off, we're off. Why are we saying that to Olam HaFuch? So says Moshe Feinstein, no. Who you think are great here, like you think are A plus over here, are also A plus over there. Who you think are D over here are also D's over there. But when he was listening in the Olam HaEmes, when he saw the world, the list of the top recruits, the top, the Hall of Fame. So there were people who were F's and D's who were higher on the level than those who were A's and B's. The same people we think are great over here were great over there. There were A's over here, there were A's over there. But they were on a lower level, a lower listing than the people who were D's and F's. I said, Olam HaFuch. What sense does that make? So Moshe Feinstein explained that you're not judged. You're not judged based on what score you get in a test, a 60, a 65. You're not judged on that versus someone else who got it to 100 or 95. You're judged on what percentage you're supposed to get of yourself. If you're a D student and you get a D, then you're a hero. Then you're a champion. And if you're an A student and you get an A minus, then you're not as great a champion as that guy is. And can you imagine someone who's an A minus gets in over, loses out to someone who's a D? That's an Olam HaFuch. We both applied to the same colleges. His GPA is 2. Minus 3.7. He got it. I didn't get it. How could, that's an Olam HaFuch. That makes no sense at all. Every college should close down if that was the case. And yet, in Shemayim, that is the case. That's an Olam HaFuch. Moshe Feinstein points out, it doesn't matter what grade point average you have. It doesn't matter if you can take an art school Gemara and study it and do well on the Bechina. It doesn't matter. You're not graded on how well you do on the Bechina. What matters is how much effort you put in. If you're a D student, you're supposed to get a D. That's what you're supposed to get. And when you get a D, you are a hero. You are bronzed in the Hall of Fame of Shemayim. More than the guy who got an A minus, if you should have gotten an A. More than that. That's an Olam HaFuch. But because Baruch Hu doesn't come to Trinity and Brioso, he doesn't come and he doesn't, he has everything that God does is fair and just. It would not be fair if that was not the case. I work as hard as I can do, I'm trying my best. The guy next to me, less so than I. He's better than I do, and everyone likes him more. They think he's working harder than I, and I'm working much harder, so good. So in the Olam HaEmes, you may be a D student, you're much higher than the guy who's an A student, if he's only getting an A minus. You're much higher. That's all you care about is what I'm supposed to be doing myself. My potential, my ability, I do what I'm supposed to do. That's it, nothing more than that. Don't look to the guy next to you. You look only in the mirror. And that's your ultimate goal. Which reminds me to point out one more thing I want to share with you very quickly. I told this to the guys on my Shabbaton. I'll share with you very briefly as well. And that is that the famous question many of the commentaries ask. Moshe Rabbeinu had 2 children, Gershom and Eliezer. And he named them in that order, Gershom and Eliezer. But the events he named them for were in the reverse chronological order. Gershon Kigera Yisi Beretz Nochria. I was a foreigner. I was a ger in a foreign language, in a foreign land. I was a stranger in a foreign land. And then he named the second kid Eliezer. Why? Because you saved me, God, from the cherev of Paro. Now, in order to get to the foreign land, he had to first be saved from the cherev of Paro. It's in the reverse order. His first son should be Eliezer, and the second son should be Gershom. And yet, when he forgot what happened, oh my gosh, you know what else can I talk about? Oh, I also was saved from Paro. Let me name my second kid that. No, that makes no sense. Moshe Rabbeinu was very well thought out in his naming of his kids. Why do you reverse the order? Moshe Feinstein says, you think it's a big deal to be saved from the Cherev of Paro and end up as a Joshimo? You think it's a big deal if Paro was caught him and was not successful in killing him, and he ended up with a regular average guy, it's nothing special. The reason why the first name is Gershon is because that shows that his life, when he was living in Midian, and he could have assimilated, he did not. He remained a ger, a foreigner in that land. That only then is it special that he was saved from Eretz Nochra. Only then is it special. And therefore the first child is Gershom. He survived the challenges of a foreign land. And then we can look back and appreciate the fact that he was saved. What's the shaykhus to you? It's a rite of passage almost at this point in time to spend your first year, maybe your last year, high school, first year after high school, to spend it in Israel. It's a rite of passage. The same way you go to high school and finish, many of you go to college and finish, and go on in your respective lives. It's normal. And you've all can say you've been to high school. It happens to be, you all probably could say at some point in time, you've been to Israel. It's not a big deal. Congratulations. You only got put on probation instead of Nikita Yeshiva. Twice. Congrats. I mean, you're going to hang it on your wall and diploma that you survived. You should wear a t-shirt. I survived Torah Shraga. I survived my Shana Aleph year in Israel. Congratulations. That's a great accomplishment. I made it from the first day of the year and I left the last day of the year. It doesn't mean much. It's not so significant. Most people who come in, come out afterwards. It's not such a big chiddush. The biggest chiddush is what you do when you're here. To be able to say that I went to Israel, but I pushed myself as much as I could. I'm not trying to be an A student, I'm a B student. I'm a B student. And to get a B when you leave, that's an accomplishment. That's greatness. It's better than many people, maybe even get higher grades. It doesn't matter. That's greatness. But to say to yourself, I went, I did my job, I spent my time, I came out, I resumed my life afterwards. So then Moshe Rabbeinu would never have named any of his kids Eliezer, because it's not a big deal. It's nothing special. You're an average guy. Now, it happens to be that in my interviewing trip, I ask the same question almost every single year. And I want to share with you some answers I received, by the way, from many of you in this room. And from many people I get the same answers. Certain ones they repeat, and they will always repeat. From the time I started to the time of my last interview, I'll always hear the following few answers over and over again. What's your goal? The question. What's your goal in your coming year? Almost always, at least 50% of interviews say the following three answers, one possible three. One, I'd like to be able to read, pick up any Gemara, read any Daf of Gemara that, you know, on any page, anywhere in Shas. Okay, it's a pretty wild goal. You're not going to be able to do that for 1 year, but it's fine. It's a nice goal. It's at least your mind is in the right place. Goal number two, I want to start to like religion. I want to feel close to God. I don't feel that right now. I want to learn. I want to learn. Also a great goal. And goal number three is the next stage of my life I'm going to. You know, I want to be able to get the tools I need to survive and to raise a Jewish family to survive the next stage of my life. Those are all three goals. By the way, those are three fine goals. Neither one of them, you know, I hear them like, my gosh, what are you talking about? Those are all normal things to say. And by the way, probably many of you, I could check, I have every person I've ever interviewed, I have all the notes I have, so I'll tell you what you said later on. Almost every one of you said something like that, at least in one of your responses. And you should have. That's 100% normal. But it's also normal when you state a goal to actually try to keep it. It's also somewhat normal. It's expected of you, if you have a goal for yourself, that you decide, I'm going to do something about my goal. It's not that I hope one day I walk in and the magic dust comes and hits me. I'm in Israel for the year after all. And when I leave, I'm sure it will just happen on its own. It does not happen on its own. I want to tell you why I left Florida. I was teaching in Florida for a number of years, for 3 years. Why I left and I came to Israel to teach in Eretz Yisrael. It was not for the financial situation, I can tell you that for sure. It's not why. There's one major reason, is I felt, and this maybe is wrong of me, maybe I did my whole teaching in high school wrong, but I felt my whole job in high school, as a teacher, as a Rebbe, was to make sure the guys didn't get too steeped in trash. And by the time I got to Israel, it took too long to get them out of it. That was my whole high school goal. I was hoping that my students, when they got to Israel, would be pretty close. They need only a few weeks to recover from their high school experiences, to be able to thrive in Israel. Can you imagine how depressing that is? To be teaching so that my students don't flunk too much. At some point I realized, you know what, why don't I try the other end of it and actually try to inspire people? And I felt the best place to do so was in Israel for the year. And therefore I came, I tried, hopefully successfully sometimes, to inspire somebody. To spend a year in Israel as all the goals we mentioned, everything we mentioned. Be able to pick up any Gemara they want and learn any daf. To feel connected to religion in some way. To feel they have the tools to survive the challenge of life. That was my goal. That is my goal, to help you achieve your goals. But I'll tell you a very scary thing. It's not foolproof. It's not foolproof. I'll tell you something very emotional, very sad for me. I'm not going to mention any names and embarrass anybody. I'm not going to do with anyone in this room. But I was home, my recent home in America, wherever, not home. I was in America on my recent recruiting trip, and I was learning with a student of mine on the phone, and I had to borrow a Gemara from a person's house that I was in. And I picked up a Gemara where I found the person. I opened the first page, who was, and I saw the person's name was. The person I'll tell you today is not religious anymore. Okay, it's really depressing a little bit. As I opened up to the Gemara, the page that my Bruce and I were learning on, I saw that person's handwriting, the underlined Rashis that you all have, and the words written on top. They didn't get creative yet to write the numbers with the columns yet. That wasn't only done much later in the year in Israel. And I'm watching and I'm picturing a student of mine writing the same words that I see in front of me. And I'm picturing, the underlining of a Rashi. And the Marmakomas list, and you marking off a little bracket over here, just get up to here. And I'm watching this happen as I'm playing through my life. I'm reading my Harusa. I'm not listening to a word he's saying even. Because I'm so mesmerized at this page. This is you. This is every one of you. This page could be any one of you. And 10 years ago, it was somebody who was the same thing you are today. A kid who wants to connect, allegedly. He wants to read a Gemara. He wants to have the tools that he needs to leave and be able to survive the challenge of the world. And yet, he didn't. Now, I didn't see him in action, so I can't tell you what happened. But I can only tell you how jarring it is to see a Gemara you could open up and it could have been yours, with all the things, the trimmings that you have in your Gemaras. And to see the result that I know about now, 10 years later, is a frightening thought. And God forbid, I don't think anyone in this room is going to go that route. God, I'm not saying that because I think it's you. I'm saying because the year in Israel is not foolproof. It's not a magic show. It's not a trick, a sleight of hand. It's about effort. It's about you deciding. I have goals I set when I came here. I would like to achieve those goals. When you put your mind to it, anything can happen. Now, I'll tell you that you could... I'll go back to the question I asked you originally, the Lama Shabbaton. Why was I so happy every time I go? The reason I'm so happy is because what I pitch, one of the things that I pitch when I go to recruiting, you go to yeshiva, and now many of you may laugh as I say this, because you think maybe it's not true. Even though I believe it's true every time I say it. You go to yeshiva, where the guys are motivated from beginning till end. They're going to come in excited, interested in growing, each for their own level, their own way. They're going to come in, they're going to look to grow, not after a month and a half, but from day one to day two, and every day in between till the last day that they leave. They look to grow. And to see a group of people in action, who are working so strong and so hard, it's a very special thing, and everyone wants part of it. You tell anyone that, they're like, that sounds fantastic. The Lama Shabbaton I went on, I didn't speak to people one-on-one so much, it's true, but I watched 85 students, different various levels of skill of religious practice, but 85 of them were on the same page at the same time for that Shabbos. We went to the same tish we went to, listened to the same divrei Torah we were giving, spent time at the same Shabbos Nirus, and it's a beautiful thing to watch. And I happen to have seen it once this year. I went the first Mishmar Thursday night that we had in the yeshiva, and it was beautiful. I can't say everyone was there. I'm not sure every person was there. But I can tell you it was packed. And it was a kol Torah. And it felt so special. And you could say to yourself, listen, what's the big deal if I'm not there? The guys who are working hard regardless. The fact is it should be true. But it's not. Because I've heard so many complaints if you're working hard. You know, this is a serious yeshiva. These are serious guys. Where? I feel like I'm the only person, no, of course I'm the only person, who's working. Can you imagine? Imagine you're invited to the most delicious restaurant with the finest of foods, the most tasty and special of wines, and you show up that day with a cold. You had a cold when you went to the restaurant. Every single thing is more bland than it should have been. The wine doesn't taste as sharp as it should have been. The food is not as spicy because you have a cold. And your senses are dulled a little bit. When you spend a year in Israel, with people vibrant based on that, the spices, every last piece is there. It's exciting. It's interactive. Everyone's involved. But if you spend the opposite, you spend a yeshiva, where 3/4 of the guys are working and 1/4 aren't working, it should be so. It's losing some of its flavor. It's missing. And it's everyone's fault. It's everyone that is no one's fault. I cannot point any fingers at anybody particularly. But yeah, everyone matters. Every last person in the room matters. An empty seat matters. Every one of you matter. And this is it. This is the last part of the year. Of the Zman. You have 1 month left. 2 weeks till Purim. This time, 2 weeks from now, you will be, say, Monday? Yeah? What time is it? Some of you may still be conscious. Some of you may not. But you all have been celebrating a festive day. Now, the story of Purim is very different than the story of Hanukkah. We know, I've heard people say this to our Torah at Hanukkah time. You got it told to me, but the grager versus the dreidel shot. The handle of the dreidel is on top, while the grager is down low. The reason why is because where did the help begin from? Was it from on top? Was it from down low in Purim? There are no open miracles in Purim. There are none. It all came from us. It came from a people that took a chance, that believed, that put an effort in. And that's what the grager is. It's from down low, it's from down here. It didn't start from anywhere else but in us. That's what Purim is all about. It's all about our personal effort. It's about our starting and kindling a fire that either exists but could exist more. It doesn't yet exist even. But it starts with you. Even if you have no such great goals right now, like the rest of my year, my goal the rest of my year is whatever. Not so great. But I have a goal in 7 years from now. I have a vision of my family at a Shabbos table singing Zmiros and telling Devar Torah. I hate to break it to you, but when you have a goal, you have to actually start working today towards that goal. Can you imagine the guy who has a goal to be a pro athlete? He's an 11th grader. And I'll start pushing with him, you're a pro athlete. I'll start pushing, you know, my last year, my senior year in college. No one's going to draft you. No one's ever heard of you. And you're out of shape. If you have a goal in life, you can't wait to start working at it. If your goal is involved in religious productivity, which I imagine everyone in this room is, you can't wait until you find a girl to get married to. It doesn't work that way. You start today, and every step you make should be towards that goal. Everything. In your professional career, that's the case. In your personal life, that's the case. And certainly, your religious life should be no different. Certainly. And it all starts from you. And it all starts from today. I'll just end with this quick story. I like to try to find things to talk about when I go recruiting. So on my trip back here, I had a very interesting seatmate on the way back to Israel. I happened to have changed my flight due to the blizzard. I thought I wouldn't make it out, and I changed my flight. I don't know why this would make any sense to me, but I changed my flight to earlier in the afternoon time when the blizzard was actually in full force, and the only plane that took off was my plane. Every other airport, the entire airport was closed except for the El Al plane that took off, which I was on. And it was not my original plan. It was a new plan I had, try to get out before the storm. And instead I got out during the storm. In my seat, I asked for like an aisle. I like actually windows, prefer windows, like the sleeping planes. And they had no windows left, and no aisles left. And I was in the middle. I was always wondering who's going to be on either side of you. So it happened to have been that there was, when the plane was filling up, it was almost done, and there was no one in the window seat. I'm thinking it must be someone who was hoping to come and got stuck in the snow. And lucky me, I'm going to be able to sit in my window seat I always wanted to sit in. And I'm watching every person walk by, you know, with trepidation. Is he going to sit in that seat? And they walk by. And finally, as the flight is just about full, a guy goes to the guy next to me who's sitting on the aisle. Listen, this is not my seat here, but some lady took my seat over there. She wants to be with her friend. I'm only sitting in an aisle. Would you mind if I took this aisle and you could take the window? The guy's like, I don't care either way. I'm like, oh, no. So this guy takes the window. This new guy takes the aisle, and I'm stuck in the middle of these two guys. Okay, I take my chumash. I'm behind Shai Mikra, but David will tell you I'm behind Shai Mikra by a number of weeks. And I start to learn a little bit. I notice the guy next to me is about my age. He's not wearing a kippah. And I don't know, he asked me a question. We start to talk a little bit. And it turns out he grew up as a conservative Jew. And then he had a time when he basically was not affiliated, and now he's Reform. And he married Jewish. His wife also was conservative, and now Reform. And I was asking him, you know, what's he doing here? So he told me he's going on a Federation trip. He's going on a trip to the Federation, with his Federation in South Jersey. And he's coming to Israel to view all the sites. Fascinating. So I was speaking to him. I said, tell me about your community a little bit. Let me hear about your community. What's it like? So he says, actually, everyone on my trip right now, except for me, basically, is over the age of 50. And the only person that's young that's on this trip. I said, why is that? So he shared with me. He said that it's so depressing in my community where I live, he says to me. He says, the young people don't have drive. They don't care. They're apathetic. They don't care at all about being part of this, you know, of our congregation, of our synagogue. And I'm trying to go here and to get excited about it and bring home stories to tell them, to try to excite them. And we spent many hours on the flight talking. And even, you know, as I was last person, my luggage, as all luggage came in and he waved goodbye to me, he took my number. I figured I'd never hear from him again. He called me yesterday. His name is Michael. He wanted to tell me about his trip or how he's doing on his trip. So I want to shoot you an email. I don't know the word shoot. I guess that's the way you say send you an email. I'm going to shoot you an email with my email address. We'll be in touch. I want to hear more about you and your life. He's a person who actually cares. And what's the Reform's Jew most depressing thing is that no one else his age cares. How depressing it is. You feel like you're working by yourself. You're trying so hard and no one's in the same page as you are. So depressing. In 2 weeks from now, we're going to be sitting and dancing. Sunday night, it'll be. Weeks from last night. We're going to be dancing. We're going to be singing. Some of us will have drank a little bit. And we'll be all besimcha. Some of you will be besimcha because you're so excited. Your hearts were bursting for this day. And it's a simcha that is just overwhelming. And some of you will be besimcha because you drank enough alcohol to get there. And by the way, it's very obvious which one is which. It's very obvious. Besides your breath. It's very obvious. Because one of the simcha has a shine on his face. And they're saying things that you never thought you'd hear in a million years. And the one who's drunk is saying things you wish you didn't hear. And it's just, it's a joke. We'll all be the simcha together. There's a tremendous difference. Now, that's 2 weeks from today. The truth is that there's 2 weeks for us to get there. Some of us have been making those strides from day one. Some of us making those strides from after conflict. Some of us have made those strides and forgotten how to make those strides. Some of us never even started making those strides. Right now, the clock starts ticking. This is the month of Adir, the mighty month. The month of Kadosh Baruch Hu is watching us. He wants to come close to us. He wants us to come close to Him. And it's a time where I don't care what you're writing in your Gemara. I don't care, you know, how many notes you made, how many rashes you underlined. It's a time when, right now, this remaining last month of Chol Hazman, you give yourself an extra kick in the pants. Give your chavrusa one also. Give your roommate one also. Every one of us, I need one also. Every one of us needs it. This is time to get it. We should be zocha in this same room in 2 weeks from today to dance together, to have alcohol as a means only of bringing out that which we feel so close in our hearts to each other, to Kadosh Baruch Hu. To spend the next month the simchas haTorah, the simcha of each other, of a chevra that cares about each other, and the simcha of a Kadosh Baruch Hu who's waiting for you, who's hoping that you'll grab onto the Eitz Chaim and just try your hardest Make this time not an A student, it's not who you are. Whatever you are, become that person. Good luck.